RCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. President Biden proposing a three-phase plan to end the fighting in Gaza. White House National Security Communications Advisor John Kirby telling ABC's This Week.
This was an Israeli proposal. We have every expectation that if Hamas agrees to the proposal, as was transmitted to them, an Israeli proposal, that Israel would say yes.
But an Israeli government official says Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was not informed about it ahead of time, and far-right members of his government have threatened to leave if he goes along with the plan. Security extremely tight at this year's Israel Day parade in New York City. Evacuations are in effect in San Joaquin County as firefighters in California battle the Corral Fire. The wildfire is now spread to more than 12,000 acres and is 15% contained. Officials say the fire broke out in a mainly rural area southwest of the city of Tracy. Two firefighters have been taken to the hospital with minor burns. This is ABC News. Fresh reaction to Donald Trump's felony criminal conviction at his hush money trial in New York. Half of people in an ABC News Ipsos poll out today say that Trump should end his presidential campaign. ABC News political director Rick Klein.
47% of voters in this survey say that these charges were politically motivated. Now, of course, a similar number think that the charges were right. So both of those things can be true at the same time. People can think it's politically motivated and at the same time think that the charges should have been brought and that the case was rightfully decided. At the end of the day, this is just tells you something about this polarized country and how the messaging now has to shift. If you're Joe Biden, this is a big opportunity for his campaign.
The Florida Panthers knocking the New York Rangers out of Stanley Cup contention. The Panthers winning the Eastern Conference in six games last night. They'll await the winner of the Western Conference final between the Dallas Stars and the Edmonton Oilers. The Oilers currently lead the Stars 3-2. Dave Packer, ABC News.
Do you have a loved one in a nursing home? California mega millionaire Eric Hovde has some bad news for you. He doesn't think they have long to live. It's true. In a recent interview, Hovde said, if you're in a nursing home, you only have a 5-6 month life expectancy. Almost nobody in a nursing home is at a point to vote. That's shocking. But it gets worse. One of Hovde's companies is named a co-defendant in a wrongful death suit from an incident at a California senior living facility. He even referred to himself as an expert in the nursing home business. Yikes, that doesn't sound like the kind of expert we need. Call Eric Hovde at his California office, 714-730-4444. Tell him that Wisconsin seniors deserve to vote and get the care they deserve. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together Incorporated.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. The Bay of Green Bay is nominated to join the 31 habitats of the Natural Estuarine Research Reserve System. Mark Richardson explains the significance.
The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, called NOAA, has designated the bay on Lake Michigan as the 31st site of habitats along the Great Lakes, coastal states, and territories. Brian Glenazinski, with the Great Lakes Initiative of Ducks Unlimited, says it's a huge win for the region's conservationists.
Some of the things that we gain from the other reserves around the country will not only inform what's happening in Green Bay, but also to tell us what's different about Green Bay and what we need to focus on.
If designated, the proposed site would make Wisconsin one of only three states with multiple reserves, along with California, Florida, and South Carolina. Financial support from the state, the Oneida Nation, and the Menominee Indian Tribe of Wisconsin would fund a position on the reserve staff to ensure that tribal nation perspectives are representative in the site's management and operations.
They continue to provide excellent partnership and the unique perspective that only they can bring to the table.
The proposed reserve is composed of three areas covering almost 38,000 acres of land and water, selected to reflect the unique nature of a large Great Lakes estuary. Lenasinski says the designation is a major accomplishment for the region's conservationists.
That conservation community is pretty special and robust in the area. To have a research reserve like this being placed in an existing conservation community is really just going to take us all to the next level.
For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Mark Richardson. Support for this reporting was provided by the Pew Charitable Trusts.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bowden.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Some fog, then we'll see a mix of clouds and sunshine. Light southeast winds developing as highs warm to the upper 70s. Tonight, showers and thunderstorms will roll in. Partly cloudy skies, southeast winds, and lows dropping to the lower 60s. Currently, it's 68 degrees.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us on Monday as we'll take a look back over the weekend and launch our new SCOMI Summer Statewide Text to Win Contest. Maybe we'll find a pool boy. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Folks, we got a new episode of the Cripes Cast with me, Charlie Behrens. Enjoy this episode with Top Chef winner turned host, Kristen Kish. Hello. How you been?
I've been good. How are you?
I am great. It was fun seeing that episode. I thought it turned out really good.
I mean, I wish all of your quick wit and all the one-off that we had on you made it in there. However, we all know sitting at that table what it was like. It was awesome.
You're too kind. It was super fun to be there, though. It really was.
Did you ever watch Top Chef or no?
So I had watched like a couple episodes of Top Chef, but yeah. Since, you know, I got lucky enough to be in the situation, I kind of went back through. I mean, I've watched this season, which has been really, really fun, and went back and watched other seasons, watched a bunch of stuff from when you were on and when you won in 2012. So, you know, what I'm like, just laying the groundwork for the audience, when it comes to food, I'm very much so like, if I've killed it, I've probably grilled it. But aside for that, not a lot of experience with cooking outside of like fish, deer, turkey, that kind of, like, I haven't done much and I don't understand. But then like watching Top Chef, you get the stories behind the food. And I think it's like a different entry point for someone, because I'm one of 12 kids. We didn't grow up going out. So we kind of have whatever my mom was making, which was always great. But it's not like I ever had a choice in food, so I never thought about it. So that translated to adulthood. And it's kind of like just something that you're not included in a little. And so you're just like, yeah, whatever it is great. All that said, super fun this season of Top Chef, because I'm learning about Wisconsin, things I didn't know. And I've lived here forever, my whole life, aside for 10 years I left. And I'm learning how that intertwines with the food. And kudos to you. You do such an amazing job hosting the show. How did it feel after having the first season done, having it roll out now? How does it all feel?
I mean, it was, I will say, from the first episode to the last episode, you got me on episode 2, which was good, because I did realize that like my nerves dropped from episode 1 to episode 2. But I know, I think just internally, it was my own pressure that I was putting on myself to like be great at this job, when I just needed to like be me, and those who liked me are going to like me, and those who don't, and that's okay. It's not my responsibility to appeal to everybody, and the people that I do will enjoy it, and that's cool.
Yeah.
You got me on episode 2. I was feeling good. I liked my clothes. I felt real good. And we had a big table. I will say, out of a lot of the group dinners that we have each episode, this one flowed in a way that is really hard to describe. It felt like as if the cameras weren't there. Like it was, I didn't have to call on people to talk. Everyone was just kind of talking, but respecting the space between everyone's words. And it felt really good. And that gave me confidence.
You know what? I got to say, as someone who did, I did a little hosting before I did stand up and comedy and all that. And anytime there is a table panel show that I audition for or whatever, it was just like, all right, get ready, because you're going to go in there and no one's going to listen to each other. Everyone's going to scream over each other, try to get that main hosting gig. And it's just going to be like really bad improv. But I agree with you. It was super cool that, you know, you had experts, people who owned restaurants, all that stuff. Me, for whatever reason. But people were listening and chiming in. And the food was incredible. So it was just a very special thing. I also have to say, it's such a treat for me being a Milwaukee guy going to the beer caves. I didn't really know the extent to I had heard those were there, but that was such a cool experience. How did you like eating in those caves?
I think the beauty of Top Chef, I've had now a season of cooking on Top Chef and a season of hosting on Top Chef. And being able to cook in so many different cool locations and present your food and draw inspiration and get excited about where you're cooking, which is likely a place you'll never really cook again unless you're invited back post Top Chef. It's the same feeling that I had from cooking to hosting. Every location we went to, when we stepped into those beer caves, I was like, holy shit. Who knew this was down here? Who knew that we could sit here and have a meal together? It was so cool. It was, you know, there's rarely a time that we go to a location, even within the Top Chef kitchen, that you're not surprised or in awe by the fact of like, we're about to eat an awesome meal made by great chefs in this really cool place. Like, how do you not get excited about that?
Yeah, no. And I love just the story. I mean, I guess going back to like what I am at the core of what I do is sort of writing. And so when I hear the stories behind the food, and Top Chef does such an amazing job with each individual contestant telling their story and how that seeps into their food to the location. I mean, it's just a different way of telling a story, which I know everybody's like, yeah, obviously, Charlie, but I'm just getting to the party on this. So it's really cool. And I, you know, I'm kind of saying that because I know there are a bunch of other people like, I don't care what about fancy food, but it's just cool to see the stories that are told. You as a host, you brought this up before. You said some people are not going to like you. Some people are going to like you. That's kind of and then making it like it is your job here. I heard you say on another interview that you were told just go out there and act like you're talking to, you know, the folks at your kitchen. Mm-hmm. And when you were kind of in that mindset, you were sort of free to see it in a certain way. Did that continue to be the case? Did that continue to be the thing that got you through the first season? Or did you find other things that you brought and added on to that, making your hosting experience what it was?
You know, I think that when someone holds a position for so long, the expectation from the viewers, and even I will say it was like the first thing in my brain, I was like, well, am I supposed to do what Padma did? And I can't really pinpoint what she did. She was just doing what she does. And to go in there and have the entry level point of being like, okay, well, there's a lot more similarities than there are differences than my real life of like kitchens, talking to, you know, cooks and restaurant people and delivering dishes or whatever, and hosting, there's a lot of similarities between these two things. I talk about what I know. I ask questions on the things that I don't know. I have no ego in that respect. Like, if I don't know what you're doing, or I've never heard of that dish, I'm going to ask you, what do you mean by that? And a natural curiosity for people. And so those things that I come to the table with, and everything else will start to define itself. That will be my hosting role defining, whether that changes from episode to episode or whether that remains consistent all the way through. You know, I always keep saying I didn't have to be the host of Top Chef. I am, in whatever all that means, like judges table, you know, making sure I had sweatpants because I wanted to be comfortable so I could actually think and be present in the moment. Or bet you didn't know that my pants were unbuckled when we were sitting next to each other eating dinner.
Yours too? You got to be kidding me. Wow.
I got to say, I think maybe we're the only person, and there are a lot of chefs at that point, episode two.
Yeah.
You ate everything, which loved so much. You were just like soaking and eating it all in, literally and figuratively.
It was so good. Plus, I'm a member of the Clean Plate Club, which I think I told you. But I mean, yeah, that was great food. Plus, I hadn't eaten that day because I knew I was going to, you know, get after it. So, yeah, it was all really good. Even the stuff that you guys were like, it's not so good. I could kind of taste that, but it was only retroactively could I taste that. I was like, yeah, that makes sense. I'll go with that, you know.
I will say that day there weren't any bad dishes, right?
Okay.
And the beauty of Top Chef is you're starting with a playing level and playing field of chefs that are like here.
Yeah.
And about who can go above that and then who maybe just kind of stays at like the good level, right? And then
right.
Who is exceptional. And so the baseline isn't bad food. The baseline is really good food. But it's then, you know, obviously our jobs to determine through technique and if you nail the challenge, who rises above. Because when you taste a dish and you know a lot about cooking and food or whatever, within the first couple of bites, you can tell if something is technically wrong. And that oftentimes will weed out a lot of stuff because at the beginning, mistakes are made and that's okay. But technically speaking, you know immediately if a dish kind of went sideways.
I see. Okay. Yeah. That's sort of like a whole new realm of things that I don't quite see yet, but it's cool to hear. It's cool to hear it explained, you know? And that's why it's fun watching the show. And I've found in doing it is you are kind of thinking, you're just thinking differently and it's fun. Is there a dish like the Supper Club episode I thought was super fun? Had you, being in Michigan, gone to like a Supper Club? Because I grew up with Supper Clubs. I was like, yeah, they're kind of everywhere. And then it was only later in life. I'm like, oh, this is mostly in Wisconsin. But I think there might be a few things, a few of them outside of Wisconsin. But
I had never been. I've been to like restaurants that, you know, start, you know, early in the evening with cocktails and bites. And you move into like this preset meal. And then you move into like after dinner drinks. And then you move into like live entertainment. I've been to that. So in a very broad definition, that's kind of a supper club with a little bit more specifics.
Yeah.
I know that we test the chefs with giving us a supper club. However, I would like to go back and experience a supper club from a supper club that has been around for, you know, ages.
Right. That's really the best. Cause you can just tell, you can smell in the carpeting, like this thing probably flooded at one point, you know? And you got the fake wooden walls. The bar is like never been renovated. It's usually like a circular kind of vibe. So yeah, super fun. Well, if you ever want to go to one, you find yourself in Wisconsin, let me know.
I will.
We'll make it
happen. I would love to dine with you.
Hey, let's make it happen. Where do you live these days? Where are you living?
We're on the East Coast, just outside of New York. So we were living in Manhattan, moved during the pandemic because we wanted more space. But my restaurant is in Austin, Texas.
Yeah. So how does that whole thing work?
I lived in Austin for 2 years to get it going. And the beauty of this part of my life is that I can openly say I don't want to spend 80 hours in a restaurant anymore. And I've carved out a path where I don't have to.
Yeah.
And so with opening in Austin, a place that I had never been before, I went in there and my very first hire, I was very honest with them. And I said, listen, I'm not going to be here forever. I'm going to live here for 2 years. I'm going to get you up to speed. I'm going to teach you everything that I have to teach you. And then it is your responsibility to carry it on a daily basis. And so that conversation happened. And almost six years later, he's still there running as my executive chef.
That's really cool. I mean, that's a tough thing to do. You know, it's tough to, leave your baby like that too in a lot of ways.
But you also learn that with it, when you relinquish that control and you know you've done what you needed to do, it's the same way that people did that for me, where then I could find my next stage in life, my next level of running something. I have been mentored by many, and I hope that I continue mentoring others. And I feel like that is the natural progression of being able to do what I do and what my career path looks like now.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of when you put trust in somebody else after teaching them all you can, seeing where they take it, that's almost the fun thing for you and also the lack of ego in that, like, it's possible you could do something I never even imagined, which is fun to see.
The restaurant is better than when I opened it. And that is the greatest feeling ever. And they don't need me there. I go and I do my visits and menu tastings and all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, what can I do? Like, do you guys need my help? Or like, I want to be wanted and needed. And they're like, no, we got it. Like, go talk to guests or something.
Yeah. You've been pushed out into the dining hall.
They're like, why are you taking up real estate in this kitchen?
No. Now, you've talked about how you've put kindness as sort of a priority in your kitchens. And why was that such a big thing for you to do, even though that's kind of a weird question, but why would you take it upon yourself to change that culture and also think it would work?
I will say a lot of my career, I didn't have to deal with so much of like the bad. I had to deal with, God, a lot of egos, which was tough. Very challenging, even when I was in the top position. And I realized that when I was in those positions, there was one particular job that really changed the course for me, is I was the boss, but there were majority of people didn't want to see me in that position. Somebody else wanted it, which then that somebody else sprinkled around like toxic behavior and just kind of made my day-to-day life unpleasant. Where you're just like not excited to be around the people anymore. You're just like, I got to go to work. I love doing the thing, but I hate doing the thing with these people. Yeah. And what it made me realize is none of them were mean at all. They just weren't kind. And what I did was I was nice back to them because I didn't want to rock the boat. And so going into Arlo Gray, which was 4 years later, I grew, I matured, I figured out what I wanted and what I didn't want. That there is a way of leading those who want to be led. Because if you don't want to be led, God, it's like an uphill battle. But those who want to be led, you can hold them accountable. You can reprimand. You can write them up if they do something that they shouldn't be doing. You can celebrate. And you can do all those things simultaneously by simply being kind. It is the intent in which you're saying and how you say it. Nothing is a personal attack. No one is not skilled. You're just maybe not doing it the right way for right now. And with that lens, I wish someone had led me that way. I think I would have learned a lot more, and I think I would have been a lot less angry, you know, but I think it's the only sustainable way to run a business. Like, we all know when you go into a room, kitchen, a comedy set, whatever, when there's like one person that just throws everything off and they're not technically doing anything wrong, that energy is what you have to stop in the kitchen, because otherwise it just spirals.
Yeah. Yeah. No, 1,000%. I mean, it happens on movie sets and it happens like in really every business, I'm sure. You know, what are like challenges to getting people to all act in this way? Because, you know, like once you're out of the room, they can just do whatever they want. They can act however they want. So how do you sort of go kindness first, but also maintain sort of that respect, if you will?
I think once you put your boundaries in place, whether you're the leader or an hourly employee, it doesn't matter. Once every single person kind of has their understanding what they want to feel like and what they won't tolerate, the people that try to push those walls and push those boundaries and try to like become kind of like this moldy spot in the kitchen, they're going to weed themselves out. But it's like, if you don't want to be here, you don't have to be here. I can find you another cook job in a week.
Right.
Like, I don't want you to be miserable.
Right. Sort of almost like saying, like even being kind to the people, not being kind of saying,
what can I do for you for your life to be happier? What can I do? I will do that. Everyone's got a story. Everyone's got a backstory. Everyone has reasons on why they are who they are. And if I like, you know, it's, you say it all the time, you don't know what someone's going through when they're being a shitty person at work. So like, lead with kindness. You don't have to allow that behavior, but you can, you know, you don't have to be an asshole back.
Right.
Unless you're a complete
There are certain times where you just got to be a human back. But I do think that, you know, I mean, it is sort of that. It's like the Midwest nice thing, too, which like I make a lot of jokes about. But I feel like the more empathy we give others, the more it softens theirs, especially like politically. We're so and have been for years just locked in this tiff stuff online. But you get in person with people, largely that kindness is there, unless you're in some sort of political event where you have a rally and people are, but mostly people are yelling and shouting because someone's holding a phone up, you know? Right. So it's cool to see you actively like showing an alternative way of doing things.
But also really exhausting to be an asshole.
So exhausting. Yeah. You got to wake up every day and choose to be that asshole.
Correct.
You gotta like some mornings you wake up happy, whether you want to or not.
Yeah.
You gotta look in your mirror and be like, huh, this place, you know? We all know people who have done that, you know.
Yeah.
How much of your food do you think is inspired by your identity as a Midwesterner, your Korean roots? Like how much of that seeps into your recipes and your creative process when it comes to food?
It is a combination of a lot of different things in my life, from childhood to adulthood, travels or growing up in Michigan. But so much of my food, I try to tap into why it brought me comfort. So the things that really stick with me, largely a lot of shit that I grew up on, from a box and meatloaf and potatoes, like baked potatoes, meatloaf, and a ton of ketchup with sour cream and dried chives was like every Friday night. I love it to this day. And so if I can tap into why that brought me comfort, it's not going to show on the plate as meatloaf, but like, what is it? It's like, it's meaty, it's salty, it's savory. You have this ketchup that is adding this balance to this loaf of meat. You have a baked potato with fat and cream on top of it. And a contrast of chives. Like when I think about what that meal is and how it tastes, I can make that into something else, which is worthy of charging money for. And if I can tap into my comfort, we are connected so deeply by food, no matter where you come from. There are comfort dishes of noodles all over the country, of stews and porridges, roasts, different things. I'm likely to tap into something that maybe is a little bit familiar to you. So it doesn't feel like it's coming out of left field. I am not one of those chefs that is trying to, you know, create a dish for shock value. There are great people that know how to do that. I'm just trying to bring a little bit of comfort.
I love that. So you take the elements of your comfort food growing up and you essentially apply that to, would you say, every dish you make or most dishes you make?
The majority. If I have to pull inspiration, if someone's like, create 10 dishes right now, I'm likely going to go to that place. You know, from there, it might go through edit after edit after edit and kind of become a little bit more far departed. But for me, that is where I like to start.
Yeah, that's really cool to hear. What was your journey to becoming a chef? Like, was it something you wanted to do as a kid? Is it something that you just found later on in life? How did it all happen?
It kind of all happened. Like, you know, you hear a lot of chefs that are like, oh, I've known since I was a kid. I grew up just like stirring the sauce over my grandmother's stove. And I just knew that this was the lifelong path that I was going to take. It was not like that. I started watching cooking shows. There's a great show. You can find it on YouTube. It's called Great Chefs of the World. And it is so low budget. It is not impressive production wise, but there's a really calming quality about it. You know, I think there's calming qualities about cooking shows out now, but I also think that they're meant to generate feeling and excitement and nervousness. This was just calm.
Yeah.
Maybe in the same way, like Great British Bake Off is just for me, calm. And so I would watch the chefs cook. And I think that I have an ability to learn how to do a task by watching someone else do it. So if there's like an actual thing, painting, woodworking, building a table, whatever, if I watch enough videos, I might not do it well, but I can do it and I can get pretty dang close. And so that's what happened with cooking, is I just zoned in on this like methodical process of creation. And I was preoccupied with being a kid and figuring myself out and being an angsty teenager and then trying to figure out where I wanted to go to school, that like cooking was there, but it wasn't the forefront. And then it wasn't until a year of failed international business and economics at a university, at Grand Valley State University in Allendale, Michigan, that I was like, wow, I'm unhappy. This is so bad. I'm bad at it and it sucks. And my mom was like, well, why don't you try culinary school in Chicago? And I went the two-year program and then just kind of started taking off from there.
That's quite the suggestion for your mom to make at that point too. You know, usually if you go to school for a semester, did you literally fail out on that?
No, I didn't fail. Well, I was failing classes. Mm. I was not asked by the university to leave. I left on my own accord.
Yeah, well, they want that tuition, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
You gotta get that. I feel like now it's very much so like, go to trade school, don't go to college. There's that sort of thing has become a bit louder and louder in the past few years. But that...
Oh, I graduated high school in 2002.
Okay, yeah. So that wasn't the time that parents were like, you know, don't go to college. That was very against the grain. I mean, that's a cool mom move right there, you know?
Huge, huge. And I think that she just noticed how unhappy. And if when you are unhappy, it is likely that you're not going to, like, there's no way my life is going to be off to a great start. And she was like, well, anything can be better than what's happening now, which she was right.
Right. That's really cool. And did your dad, was he... in the mix?
Oh, my dad is a man of few words, but like fiercely, fiercely loyal to whatever I want to do. So he's going along with it. He's like, cool, great. You know, my mom taught child psychology. My dad is an engineer. My brother is an engineer. And then, you know, for my entire family to just, you know, see my lack of enthusiasm for life, it was like, let's like push her into wherever she needs to go.
Right, right. Yeah. No, 1,000%. It's too long of a road to hate it that much.
News from the center, WRCE.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. President Biden proposing a three-phase plan to end the fighting in Gaza. White House National Security Communications Advisor John Kirby telling ABC's This Week.
This was an Israeli proposal. We have every expectation that if Hamas agrees to the proposal, as was transmitted to them, an Israeli proposal, that Israel would say yes.
But an Israeli government official says Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was not informed about it ahead of time, and far-right members of his government have threatened to leave if he goes along with the plan. Security extremely tight at this year's Israel Day parade in New York City. Evacuations are in effect in San Joaquin County in California as firefighters there battle the Corral Fire. The fire has now spread to more than 12,000 acres and is 15% contained. Officials say the fire broke out in a mainly rural area southwest of the city of Tracy. This is ABC News.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
The Brewers bank another win. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. It took 10 innings, but the Brewers able to pull off a 4-3 win over the Chicago White Sox. The Sox led 3-1 before Willie Adames came up with this clutch hit in the bottom of the seventh with two outs driving in two runs. Coverage Bally Sports Wisconsin.
They're loaded up, the 1-1. Adames up the middle. It's through, a base hit in the score terrain. Contreras to the plate, and he is in there. A close play at second. Yelich just got back.
Adames would later drive in the winning run in the bottom of the 10th. Pat Murphy said a lot of players contributed.
They kept themselves in the game. They played defense. Chirios catch, a couple Perkins' catches. Chirios catch in right field. You know, double play we turned with Ortiz. His footwork was great. Turned by Terang was great. It's a good win. It's a good win because it can go the other way real quick.
That's Brewers manager Pat Murphy. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Some fog, then we'll see a mix of clouds and sunshine. Light southeast winds developing as highs warm to the upper 70s. Tonight, showers and thunderstorms will roll in, partly cloudy skies, southeast winds, and lows dropping to the lower 60s. It's 69 at our studios.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
An unsuspecting driver.
John Peterson and Gordy Young.
There's an article that's going to come out Monday about John and Gordy on channel3000.com.
And it better be good.
We'll have our review of Doug's review Monday.
The John and Gordy Show. Weekday morning, 6 until 8.
Baseball from WRCE Radio is sponsored by Jones Chevrolet Buick, A&W Restaurant, Badgerland Flooring, Clary Memorial Funeral Home and Cremation Services, Meister Log and Lumber Company, Napa Auto and Truck Parts, Bailey Paint and Decorating, Papa's Trading Post, Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service, Richland Electric Cooperative, Schmidt Woodland Hills, The Shoebox, Walsh's Ace, McFarland's Manufacturing, All-American Do-It Center, and Goplin Insurance.
Okay. Cardless. Bliss is more.